I have nothing particularly complicated to preach on tonight. I'm going to preach it simply from the Bible, from Genesis 39, if you could turn there with me, please. I wonder if you ever considered what it means to be a Christian, or what it's like to be a Christian. And that might seem like a strange thing to say for a room filled with people who probably, a lot of us, if not the vast majority of us, are Christians. I wonder if you ever really thought as a Christian what it means to be a Christian. Maybe you could tell me the theology or the Bible verses behind it, but I wonder if you ever really thought what that looks like, what it really means every day to be a Christian. Maybe if you're not a Christian in here tonight, maybe you've always wondered, well, what does it mean to be a Christian? If this is the first time that you've seen something like this, maybe you think this is all very strange. What we do as Christians, but I want you to try and focus particularly on what we say from this chapter of the Bible tonight, because there are a number of truths in here that will help you as a Christian, or as someone who's not a Christian, or as someone who's totally unfamiliar with God's Word, what it actually is to be someone who calls themselves a Christian. So from Genesis 39, I want us to read, and it's a story that most of you, if not all of you, will probably know well, and we're going to take just a minute to read the whole chapter. So let's go from Genesis 39, verse 1. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hand of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had been put into his hand. It came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and when he knew not what he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me," but he refused, and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath into my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And it came to pass, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, "See, he hath brought in a Hebrew unto us to mock us, and came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his lord came home. And she spake unto him according to the word, these words, saying, "The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought into us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lift up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, "After this manner did thy servant to me," that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, and showed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Then the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did have, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. And we'll finish reading there. There are a couple of phrases which appear throughout that chapter. And in fact, if you actually turn to Acts, to where Stephen is defending himself, he actually brings this theme back up when he's talking about Joseph. He says, "And the Lord was with him." And it's mentioned at the start of this chapter, and it's mentioned at the end. And I just want to read verse 2 and 3 again to you. And these are the two verses that I really want you to focus on tonight. If there's any verse that I want you to try to keep your eye on tonight. It's these two. And the Lord was with Joseph. That's the first thing. And he was a prosperous man. That's the second thing. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. That's the third thing. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. That's the fourth thing. Those are four things that I want us to see tonight in Joseph. And hopefully we can use those to even correct some misconceptions there perhaps are about the life of a Christian and what it means to be a Christian. I don't normally choose titles for what I say, but I try to scribble one on the top of my notes just before I go out if anybody asks. And I wrote this question at the top of my page tonight. Who's faithful? Who is faithful? ? We're going to come back to that question at the very end and hopefully see what the answer to it is. So the first thing that we see in the life of Joseph, the Lord was with Joseph. I'm sure you know the story of Joseph. I'm sure you know the background. He is the son of Jacob, but he's more than that. He's actually the favored son because he's the first son of Rachel. And if you read a couple of chapters back in this story, you'll understand the context behind all of that, that Joseph was really in his father's eyes set apart from the rest of his children because his father loved Rachel more than his other wives. And when Joseph was born, he was the special one. And as you probably know, it's been made famous. He got a coat that was made of many different colors, many different types of color. And it was probably a very spectacular, very expensive thing. And it set him apart from the rest of the children. It set him apart from his brothers and his sisters. He was different. He was lifted high in the eyes of his father in a way that he really probably shouldn't have been. But he was. And because of that, he was hated by those that were in his house. And you know the story that he was a dreamer. He got dreams from the Lord. And he didn't really help himself when he told his brothers and his family what these dreams were, because even though they really made no sense at the time, this little country lad who had the coat to his father thought he was great, and his brothers didn't particularly like this. He was dreaming these dreams that seemed to drive the nail in even further. He said, I dreamt last night, and the interpretation of the dreams always seemed to be that Joseph was better than everybody else. The interpretation of the dreams always seemed to say that Joseph was going to be lifted higher than his brothers and even his family. And whilst his father and mother were probably very happy at the first dream where Joseph was higher than his brothers, they even weren't so pleased at the second dream, which seemed to suggest that he would be higher even than his parents. Of course, it's only when we read the chapters after the chapters that we have read that we fully understand what those dreams mean. But because of that, Joseph was not liked. In fact, they mocked him. Oh, look, it's the dreamer. Behold, look, the dreamer's coming. And if you know the story, one day Joseph went to visit his brothers and they were out tending to the flocks. And they said, look, here's Joseph coming. Let's get rid of this problem once and for all. And so only for the intervention of one brother, they just but killed him. They decided to throw him in a pit. And then they decided that they would sell him to some merchant traders who were coming past. And they took his coat, his beautiful coat that his father had made, and they killed an animal, and they dipped the coat in the animal blood, and they brought the coat back to their father and led Jacob to believe that Joseph had been killed by a wild animal. That's the background to the man that we see in chapter 39. This is a young man who has gone through an incredibly traumatic experience. He's been taken into the land of Egypt. Egypt, no doubt, had affluence like he had never seen before, architecture like he had never seen before. Systems of life that just were so foreign to him. And suddenly he's sold into this house. Potiphar, he's probably just a slave thrown in to do some work. But we know from the verses that God was with him. And irregardless of everything that had happened before, this was the most important thing for Joseph. No matter what had happened to him, the Lord was with him. On that whole journey that he had taken, God was with him. One of the saddest verses in the Bible is found in the book of Judges, I think. It's after Samson has had his hair cut and his strength leaves him, and he goes out, he runs out to get the Philistines, and the Bible says, but he knew not that the Lord was no longer with him. It's not even that the Lord wasn't with him, he didn't even know. How different Joseph's story is. A man who the Lord really was with him. The Lord is with him for his whole journey. In fact, the Lord had been with his family for a very long journey. If you know the story at all, there have been many journeys in the books of Genesis. I'm sure there's probably Christians in here and you're trying to read through the Bible in a whole year. And if you've started at Genesis heading to Revelation, you've probably read these chapters within the past few weeks. And you know that his whole family have gone through this huge, big journey and process. And God's been with them every step of the way. And God was still with this family in the person of Joseph. God was being faithful. There's that word coming up. God was faithful to Joseph, even though he was in Egypt. Even though he was in a place that in his head, he was probably thinking, I should not be here. I'm not meant to be in this land. My father probably thinks I'm dead. My parents probably think I'm never coming home. And here I am in Egypt, and there's nothing I can do. I'm a slave. But I wonder, for us as Christians, we sometimes forget that God is with us. That this verse can actually be written over our lives, but the Lord is with us. We get up in the morning, we go about our daily business, and quite often if we're doing work that we call secular work and things of the Lord aren't always the first things on our mind, sometimes we just forget the Lord's with us. And I was speaking to a group a few weeks ago and I was trying to explain what this word with means and what it means for the Lord to be with someone. And I suppose there's a few different ways that you can take it. The Lord was with his people, and the Lord was with Joseph, and the Lord is with us in the sense that he can see us, that his eyes are everywhere, that the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the earth, that he sees us and he understands everything that we do, and there's nothing that we do that he cannot see. But then you have the sense that he's with his people, that he's with them in the sense that, yes, I'm with you. If you're going out to do something, an army's going out to battle, and they maybe form an alliance, and one will say to the other, yes, I'm with you in this. The Lord is with us in that sense, that when we go out to take on the day, take on the enemy, the Lord is with us, that his spirit fights for and with us. He doesn't sit in heaven and let us just go about our day and go, well, all the best with that. He not only sits in heaven, but by his spirit, he helps and empowers us every single day. And of course, in the ultimate sense, he is with us in that he sent his son to die. God is with us, Emmanuel, and his spirit resides in us. He is quite literally with us every single day in what we do and what we say. God is with us. And of course, God's people, when you look at the start of the Old Testament, God being with them meant the tabernacle, meant that there was this tent in the middle of their encampment where they could see the place where the Lord was, and they could physically see, well, that's the temple, that's where the high priest goes in, that's where God is with us. And then when they finally got the temple built in Jerusalem, they had a place where they could go and say, well, this is where God is with us. But for us now, it's totally unrestricted. Our access to God doesn't require a priest or a high priest or an offering or anything like that. God is with us in that his spirit resides within those who are Christians, those who are saved. Unrestricted access to the God who is with us. But maybe this whole concept is foreign to you. Maybe you're not a Christian and maybe you think, well, I just don't understand what this means. God is with us. What does that mean? You know, there's much said about God today that simply isn't true. In fact, even people who quote the Bible can say things about God that aren't true. They just throw a verse in and suddenly God said something which really he has never said. But I want you to understand that when we say that God is with Joseph and with God is with Christians, it's not just some phrase that we throw out there. Ask anyone who's a Christian and they will tell you of times in their lives that God really has been with them. Don't take their word for it. See it in the Bible. Go and read what God says. He says, I am with you. There are so many times that God tells his people, I am with you. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. And those are such wonderful promises. And God is with us in such a great way, just as he was with Joseph. Look at the second thing. Not only was the Lord with Joseph, he was a prosperous man. And prosperity is a difficult subject to speak on from a pulpit. It's a controversial subject. I know many of you are equally as disgusted as I am at what is called the prosperity gospel. People who talk about believing in God to become rich, or that having so much faith will make you so wealthy. But the problem is that when we talk about that, then we actually swing the other way and we don't want to talk about prosperity at all. And a verse like this, well, we read it and we believe it, but we don't really want to dwell on it. And I have to say, when I was preparing this, I was tempted not to deal with this sentence, but I do want to. The issue is not with prosperity. The issue is not with being rich. The issue is not with being healthy. The issue is not with being wealthy. That's not what the issue around prosperity is. Who makes the prosperity? That's the problem. And if you look at what happens here in Joseph's life, you will see a number of phrases that really give you the key to where his prosperity came from. Look at the very last verse, the very last line of this chapter. And the Lord made it to prosper. It was the Lord that gave the grace. It was the Lord that gave the favor. It was the Lord that gave the prosperity. You see, if you flick on the TV and you go to some of these preachers that preach like this, they'll tell you that it's you that makes you prosperous. Have more faith and be wealthy. Have more faith and be healed. And if you're not wealthy, well, there's something wrong with you. You haven't given enough money. No. The wealth comes from the Lord. The prosperity. And of course, the prosperity in Joseph's case wasn't really prosperity as we know it. He was still a slave. He was still a servant in a household, albeit very well treated. But Joseph wasn't a free man. He probably wasn't a very wealthy man. He couldn't just walk out the door and go home whenever he pleased. But yet he prospered, and he knew that everything that he had was from the Lord. He knew that the prosperity that he had came from God above. His dreams that he had had, he knew that those were from God. Even when his family weren't really sure, his position, he knew that it was from God. I mean, how could an Ishmaelite who had been brought here, how would it be possible for him, an Israelite, to come here and possibly be put into the position that he had been put in? He knew that it could only be of God. And we see that further down that even his sexuality came from God. It all came from above. None of it was his to squander as he pleased. None of it was his just to take and do whatever he wanted with it. He knew that it had come from God and he wanted to use it to honour and to serve him. And you might be tempted to say tonight, well, God hasn't given me anything. So I can't really apply this either way, but actually, no matter whether you're a Christian or not, God has given you so much. There are things that God chooses to bless everyone with. Every breath that you take is given to you by God. It's not a conditional thing that you have to be a Christian to breathe. That's a ridiculous thing. There are things that God gives to everyone. Everyone in this room, I can see, has clothes to wear. You've obviously eaten something up until now because you're still alive. You probably are all going home to warm beds tonight. God has blessed you with so much, whether you are a Christian or not. But remember that it all comes from him. Yes, you might work and get a paycheck at the end of the month, but really it all comes from him. And we would do well to remember that. Is it interesting that God chooses to give these things to people that hate him? That God chooses to give breath to those that use that breath to blaspheme his name? He could take it away like that. He could make it that not one word is ever spoken against his name. And yet he chooses to give breath to everyone. And in fact, when we read further through the scripture, we see an even more beautiful picture of this, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. While we were in a position of hatred towards him, which is the position that everyone is automatically in when they are born, Christ died for sinners. He didn't look at you as perfect and say, yes, I'm going to die for you, because none of us are perfect. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Seeing us in the state that we were in, God haters, he chose to die for us. That's the faithful God that we serve. Look at the third thing. Not only was the Lord with Joseph, not only was he a prosperous man, but something more than that. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. You see, it's one thing to say the Lord was with Joseph, but quite often you get an argument that goes something like this. Well, of course you can say the Lord's with you. Your life's great. Of course you can say, oh, I'm a Christian and I love being a Christian, so you've got your cozy job and your cozy house and your nice church, and everything's just going great in your life. You're not ill. You don't have any shortage of money. It's easy for you to trust in God. But just wait until you lose it all, and then you'll really know. But look where Joseph was. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. He wasn't at home with his family. He wasn't at home roasting his feet by the fire. He wasn't at home having a nice dinner with all of his family and cousins and everybody that he knew and loved. He wasn't in the comfort of a land that he knew well. He was as far away from home as he'd ever been in his life. He was in an unknown house. He was in a position that was probably torturous to him in some ways. And yet he knew the Lord was with him. And he chose to serve God in that place. You see, God's plan doesn't equal everything going well for us. In fact, that's paganism. You know, if you do really well, God will bless you. And if you don't do well, God will stop the rain and all this kind of stuff. God's plan is not always that everything goes well. God's plan is not always that everything goes great. Now, he has greater purposes for it, and in the end, it'll be more glorious. But quite often, there are hard things that come into our lives. There are difficult things that come into our lives. Can you imagine anything as difficult as what this young man went through? He wasn't even fully matured yet, and here he is, shipped off to this faraway country, not even knowing actually what his family thought had really happened to him. So you might say, well, Joseph had everything he wanted. He was in a big, wealthy house. He was in a big, wealthy family. There were clearly good-looking women around him. I mean, what could possibly have been worse for him? And yet, there were so many things that he didn't have, so many things that he probably really wanted, and yet he was faithful. I mean, think about it for a minute. So what if Joseph hadn't followed God? Who would have known? Who would have cared? Joseph chose to be faithful with this issue with Potiphar's wife that we see further on down the chapter. I mean, so what if he had disobeyed God? His father certainly wouldn't have seen it. His brothers wouldn't have seen it. Probably nobody else would ever have known. So why would he bother? He didn't say in the chapter later on, how can I do this great sin against my master or against my family or against myself? He said, how can I do this sin against God? Joseph's heart, even though he was very much in Egypt, his heart was with the Lord. He knew the Lord was with him. He knew it was the Lord that was prospering him. He knew it was the Lord that had got him to this position. It wasn't anything of himself. How then did he throw it in the face of God and do this great wickedness? Even though if he had done it, nobody, if they'd never known, would have cared. And yet Joseph chose to be faithful to God. I wonder where our Egypts are. You see, we're in a church building right now, and for most of you, this is your stage for being a Christian. But what about when you go home at the end of the night? What about when you go into work tomorrow morning? Let's say that's your Egypt. Who cares if you don't follow God? Who's going to see it? Chances are none of us will ever see it. But God sees it. God sees what happens at home. He sees what happens in work. He sees the witness that goes forth from the Christians that are in this room. Are we faithful to him? Are we faithful to God in the places where our family, friends, and Christian colleagues can't see it? And look at the very last phrase. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. Joseph's faithfulness was noted by a pagan. The fact that God was with Joseph was noticed by somebody who didn't even believe in God. Now, that's quite something. Joseph's been taken, he's been put into this context. It's totally strange for him. And he serves his master faithfully, even though he probably doesn't want to do it. Even though he's thinking, this man paid money for me. But I'm going to serve him. I'm going to do what I can. And that's exactly what he does. And you can imagine it. I'm sure you've seen film portrayals of Joseph working hard in the house, doing everything to the best of his ability. And he's noticed. It's noticed that Joseph's different from the other slaves and the other servants. He doesn't just do it because he has to, because he's captured. It seems that he has this higher purpose in everything that he does. And of course he does. To Joseph scrubbing the floor, wiping the Egyptian pottery, he's not for the Potiphar. He's doing it for God. He wants to do it to the best of his ability. And it's noticed that God is with him. And it's noticed that seemingly everything he puts his hand to is blessed. That any job he does it better than anybody else. He does it brilliantly. And soon Joseph rises up the ranks to be at the top of the house. This stranger from another land who's purchased comes in. This Israelite, not even an Egyptian, and suddenly he's above everyone else in the house. At home, Joseph was noted for his godliness. His brothers saw it, hated it. Potiphar's house, he's noticed for his godliness. Potiphar's wife saw it and hated it. And even when he gets to prison at the end of the chapter, the same thing happens. Anywhere this young man goes, God is with him, God prospers him, and he's faithful. It's the same pattern throughout his whole life. Look at the very end of the chapter. If you read those last few verses from verse 21, again you have when the Lord was with Joseph. And whatever he did, the Lord made it to prosper. You see, this brings us back to what we were saying a minute ago about who sees us in our faithfulness. You see, it shouldn't really matter who sees us. Because the only one who will ever have the power to judge us for that is the one who sees it all anyway, even if nobody else does. But there's a greater issue here. Who sees that the Lord is with us? You see, it's one thing really being faithful, and it's one thing having all this in our head, but who sees that God is with us? Who is it that looks at us in our day-to-day lives and says, God's with that person? There's something different about that person. There's something about them. Even though they've been taken from their homeland, even though they're in Egypt, even though they're a slave, they still want to be faithful to this God. And this God seems to be with them. And it doesn't really seem to matter to them what's going on around them. Their situation doesn't seem to matter. They're just happy to serve God. Do people see that in us as Christians? Do people look at us and say, the Lord is with them? God is with them? We are commanded in the Bible to let our light shine before men. Can I encourage all of us who are Christians, don't just let it shine, let it burn so that people can see that God is with us. Because if you're a Christian, God is with you. Are we faithful to him? Do we show others that God is with us? Now maybe you're not a Christian. Maybe you're sitting here thinking, if only you knew the Christians I knew. If only you saw the things that they did and heard the things that they say. Well, let me maybe help you with this. Let's imagine that you're going to buy a new phone and you go into the phone shop and you've decided in your head the sort of phone that you're going to buy, and you've gone in and you say to the guy behind the till, look, I want to buy this phone. And he says, oh yes, I have one of those phones, actually. And he takes it out of his pocket and it's all smashed. He dropped it or whatever and it doesn't work. And he says, ah yes, I have one of those phones. And you look at the phone that he's taken out of his pocket and go, oh, don't want one of those phones anymore. I mean, it's ridiculous because you know that that's not what the phone's like. If you were to go and buy it, it would be perfect. It would be wonderful. It is foolishness for you to base Christianity on people that are Christian. It's foolish for you to look at Christians who are an imperfect reflection of the image of God and say, well, you're not perfect, so I don't want anything to do with God. We will never be perfect until the day we get to heaven. And that excuse of, well, look at those Christians, that won't last a second on Judgment Day. God doesn't ask you to look at other Christians. He asks you to look at Jesus' Son. He asks you to look at the perfect one who came from heaven to earth to die to pay the price of sin. That's who God asks you to look at. And it's him who he asks you to turn to. See, not even Joseph was perfect. We don't seem to read of him doing too much wrong if you read the chapters. But even Joseph wouldn't have been perfect. You see, when you see Jesus for who he really is, one of two things will have happened. Either your eyes will have been opened and you will want to put your trust in him, or you're standing before him on Judgment Day and it will dawn on you that that fellow that stood in the Baptist that night and waffled for half an hour was right. This Jesus guy really is real. This Bible thing really is true. Why did I not listen? At that point, it's too late. I pray that you will see Jesus for who he really is tonight. I pray that your eyes would be opened and you would see that he is the only one that can change your life. So that begs the question, who is faithful? I said it at the start and I'll say it again at the end. Who is faithful in this whole Christian thing? I mean, is God the one who's faithful, or are we the ones that have to be faithful? I mean, the Lord was with Joseph and he prospered him, but Joseph chose not to sin and Joseph chose to follow God. So who actually has to be faithful in order to be a Christian? Well, the answer is both. But here's the thing, we can only be faithful because he is faithful. That's the only reason, that's the only place that our faithfulness comes from. We can have a facade of faithfulness, but it'll not be real. Any faithfulness that Christians portray is faithfulness because their Savior is faithful. Joseph was a faithful servant of God. That much is clear. If you read the chapters that follow, you will see that. But he was only faithful because of the first thing we saw in this chapter. The Lord was with him. If God had not been with Joseph, there is no way that he would have been faithful. But because the Lord was with him, he was. I don't know what your attempts at following God are like. Maybe they're religious, maybe they're not. But you will never please God unless you turn from your sin and you trust in him. Because he has been faithful in sending his son. He has been faithful in making a way for you to be saved. Your faithfulness will only ever be found in him. Your faithfulness, just like Joseph, will only ever be found in the fact that the Lord needs to be with you. And God has made himself to be with us in such a real way. He literally sent his son to be with us. I mean, think about it. Would we really be here 2,000 years later if God were not with us? Christianity would have died out years ago. And yet God has been faithful to his word that his church would remain. But don't take us as the evidence of it. Turn to the word of God. Ask God to show himself to you. Ask him to reveal these truths to you as you open the word, and I believe he will. So who's faithful? Well, God is faithful. And if you're a Christian in here, remember that God is faithful and he's the one that can help you to be faithful. But if you're not a Christian, remember that he has been faithful in sending his son to die. And it's our prayer that you would turn from your sin, that you would repent is the word that we sometimes use. Tell God you're sorry for your sin and trust in him. And you'll understand what it is for the Lord to be with you. We're going to sing together. And it's a song that goes along those lines. Great is thy faithfulness. Number 107. And as we sing this, if you're a Christian, you can really mean this, that he is so faithful no matter what happens. Great is thy faithfulness. Let's stand to sing.